But we need to be mindful of what is what our relationship patterns are. Oh, and what I was going to say is I really feel like that we need to TBRI per se each other. Number one, that helps us to model to our clients how to relate to each other, but it also helps us to heal personally. Because we all have things. And you know what? You may have already dealt with your history. You may already be in therapy or have done therapy. But what happens, this is what, before I knew TBRI, when I was interviewing house parents, I would always say, okay, this is not always easy work. And inevitably, a child is going to come and be right here in front of your face, and it's going to be you. It may not necessarily be, oh, okay, this kid is going down the exact path that I did. It could be something. It could be their behavior. It could be them manipulating, them lying, them stealing, okay? All of those triggers that we all have, those are things that are connected to our history and our past and how we handle those. Now, am I saying that you shouldn't be frustrated when kids make mistakes? No, I'm not saying that. But be mindful, because when you're struggling, when you find yourself stuck and struggling, I don't know how to get past this. I cannot stand it when they lie to me. I hear that a lot, that lying is a really hard thing. Manipulation. They're manipulating me. They know better. Okay. We're going to talk a little bit about survival behavior later on. I think that's in the correcting piece. But if we're able to step back and go, no, wait a minute. This kiddo's really had a tough road. Is this more about them or is this more about me? Okay, so being mindful of those things and working through, because we always constantly have to work through our stuff. Being aware of the child's emotional and physical needs is really important. Okay, you might get that through your history that you gain out of your intake or whatever information that you get from the case managers, things like that. But being mindful of that is super important. And being aware of the current situation environment. You know, we were talking about this morning, if you are going on a wonderful trip, vacation to Disney World, you might need to be mindful that that could be overwhelming to some of your kids. Just being mindful of that can then go, okay, so if they are going to be overwhelmed by this, how can I make this better? Can I plan out a little bit better? Can I make sure that instead of us being in the middle of a huge crowd, that maybe I have a special person that's with this kiddo that really, you know, really gets overwhelmed with crowds. You know, just thinking through that process and being mindful is going to help you out and help the children out. Okay, so let's talk about attachment. Now, attachment could be a whole section and a whole day to itself. So I'm going to try to give you enough that will give you what you need. But I won't be able to give you everything that I want to give you. but let's talk about attachment self-regulation. So in optimal development, okay, so if you've got a kiddo that has parents that are, understanding of their needs and are right there meeting their needs, the caregiver will act as the emotional regulator for the first years of life. So think of a baby. How does a baby tell us what they need? Yeah, they cry because they don't have verbal skills quite yet. And so when they cry, what would an attentive, nurturing adult do? That's right. So you already know as a nurturing adult that baby's probably hungry, probably needs a diaper change, might be cold. You know, maybe they don't have enough. Maybe they need to be swaddled. And sometimes those sweet babes just need to be held. Kind of feeling lonely sitting in that crib. They may just need to be held for a little bit and cuddled and cooed at and looked at. Okay? So we act as their regulator, their emotional regulator in the beginning, because they don't know how. All they know to do is cry. Something's going on with me. I'm just going to cry. Okay? So that somebody will come. Right? And by the way, God designed us that we have to have a caregiver. We have to. We will die. There was another study done where children were, half of them were, you know, given the same amount of food, but again, they were given, attention, They were held, they were talked to, taken out of their cribs. And then the others, I think this was at an orphanage, I think. The others were just, all they were given was just a spoon food. Full, you know, they were just given that food and that's it. They weren't talked to, they weren't touched. Some of them died because we must have contact and relationship. Is that important to us? So in the beginning, we regulate for them. As they get a little bit older, like twos and threes, we co-regulate. We regulate with them. So they're becoming a little bit more independent. They're walking. They're getting into everything. They want to do things all by themselves. So they'll say, "Mommy, juice." And then they run over and try to get the big old thing of juice and pour it. And you're like, "Oh, Mom. Okay, let's do this together. We can do this together. I'll help you do that." So you're helping them to regulate. And then hopefully, by the time they're six or seven, about ready to go to school, then they have learned, not completely, but they have learned to regulate themselves. So when they're on the playground and one of the classmates comes up and takes one of their toys, they don't just automatically punch him in the mouth. They might think, "I'll go over here and do something else." Or they get really upset and they go to the adult and say, "So-and-so took my toy." And then that adult can take care of that situation. And you know why they do that? Because we have been there. We have modeled that behavior for them and taught them a safe and nurturing adult will meet your needs. And so when I feel bad, when I'm upset, when I'm sad, when I'm scared, I go to my attachment figure, the person that I have built a bond and relationship with that I know will come running every time when I need my diaper changed, when I need to be fed, when I need to be swaddled. All of that is a powerful message that you send when you start out in the beginning as their external regulator. So in places, in places of fear, children's needs are not regulated, okay? They don't have a nurturing, safe adult that comes to them and says, "It's going to be okay. I'm going to give you a bottle when you're hungry. I'm going to change your diaper when it's dirty." Okay? That's what happens. Children don't learn how to regulate on their own. Therefore, they learn other strategies to meet their needs. So that's when you see violence and aggression. You see behavior. I always tell people, behavior is communication. Okay? If a child is exhibiting maladaptive behaviors, he's trying to tell you something. And so that's when you start being that detective that we talked about earlier and saying, okay, what's going on? What's the history? What's the situation? Back to being mindful on the other slides before. What's going on? Is there a developmental issue? Is there a sensory issue? Is there something empowering that we can do for this kiddo? Okay? So just remember that that behavior, even though it can be really challenging for us and frustrating, that child is giving us actually a gift. They're telling us something is wrong and I don't know how to tell you. I don't know how to tell you what I need. I don't even know what I need. So I'm just going to do what I know to do to survive. Okay? So skills of attachment. I think this will be very helpful to you. It's very helpful when I work with families. I do in-home interventions with families that are local to me, and I go to their houses because it's best to go in their environment so that I can see what it is that's challenging for their kids. And when I always have a meeting first with the parents so that they can talk to me about what's going on and share without the children to be around. What they need. And some of the things that I always ask them is these questions. So you know that a child has a natural, secure attachment to their caregivers when they have these four attributes. So I ask them when I meet with them, does your child, are they able to offer care to people? I mean, something as simple as, if I were to drop this little squishy line on the ground by accident, would your child say, "Oh, Miss Angie, here's your lion." Okay, that's an easy way to give care. Or if I were to stub my toe and go, "Oh gosh, that hurt. Oh, Miss Angie, are you okay? Do you, you need a Band-Aid? That's giving care. So if you think of the children that you're working with, or in my case, if I'm working with a family, and I say, hey, think about your kid. Maybe think of it on a Likert scale. You know, how likely are they to give care? That's a really good thing to think of, because a lot of our kids, they weren't given care, so they don't know how to give care to people. The next one, how are they able to receive care? Are they able to receive care from you? So if you go up, if they fall off their bike, you know, a lot of our kids, they fall off their bike and you might even have blood, you know, you might have scraped their knee and have blood streaming down their leg. Some of them don't even cry, because they've learned, if nobody's going to come when I cry, I'm not going to cry. I'm just going to take care of it myself. Right? So they may not even tell you that they fell off the bike, and they come in the house. You're like, oh my gosh, what happened? You got blood. Oh, yeah. And you're like, oh my, I can't believe you didn't come in here and talk to me. So, and it may be that they don't know to ask for care, that, you know, they're going to tell you. But that also may be, the situation that you walk up to try to help them with, maybe homework, or, maybe they're working with their Legos and they're trying to build something, and you walk up and say, oh, it looks like you're struggling. You want me to help? And they're like, no, I don't want to help. Or, you know, food, I mean, all kinds of things. But if they struggle with receiving care, because a lot of times they were, parentified, so they might have been the caregiver, and so they really don't feel comfortable receiving care from other people. Or just simply, I don't know what that looks like. They've never had anybody do things for them. So it's like, oh, that's foreign to me. I'm not sure that I like that. You're getting too close to me. I don't know. You know, they have kind of made people, put people at a, you know, at a distance, because they don't know how to do relationships. Okay, ability to negotiate needs. Are they able to, and this might look like manipulation to some of you guys. Let's say they are playing outside and you need them to come in for dinner in about 15 minutes. And so you go out and say, okay, Billy, it's time to come in for dinner. We're going to eat in about 15 minutes. And they go, I'm playing basketball. And you say, well, we're going to have dinner in 15 minutes. We're all going to come in. So I need you to come in and wash your hands and get ready for dinner. And they may come in and go, Miss Angie, we're almost done with this game. Can I have like 5 more minutes? So being able to negotiate reasonably, okay? So if they said, I don't want to eat dinner, I want to keep playing basketball. Well, that's not really reasonable. And so I work with them on that and go, gotta eat dinner. And we'll talk, maybe I'll use that situation when we talk about correction in the last session. But a child being able to negotiate their needs, some children don't feel that their needs are important enough to voice their needs. Okay? And so, whereas the same situation with a kid where I called them in for dinner, maybe they were, let's not say basketball, because they're playing something, because that's not, you know, something that's super important, but let's say they were outside on the porch working with somebody on a project for school that's important that's due the next day. And so you come out, do the same thing, and they might be almost done, and it's like the most important piece. Whereas if you knew that, you'd go, oh, okay, yeah, let's give you 5 to 10 more minutes so you guys can get done with that. I know you need to turn that in tomorrow. Well, a child that can't negotiate their needs would never say that. They would never even mention it to you. They go, okay, fine. And they'd get like a C or a D on the project, but they could have asked. They could have used their words and asked. So negotiating needs, okay? Then the last piece is autonomy. Is your child comfortable with being in the context of being in a group? Like they feel comfortable, they can socialize, they can share, they can play. And also they feel comfortable by themselves. Like I'm cool with kind of hanging out and doing my own thing. A lot of our kids struggle with that, either one of them. Okay, they have a hard time relating to other people, and they really desperately want to have friends. In fact, they want it so bad that they're just like, oh, overwhelming to people, and they almost come across as being a bully I have several clients that have children that are that way. And it truly is that they're dying to have relationships with friends, but they don't know how. They don't have the ability to relate to people. And then also, sometimes you've got the kid that was just like they're on you like glue all the time. And you're like, oh, can I like take a potty break for a minute? But they're scared to be by themselves, and they need to be with somebody all the time. Okay? So the way that you know that a child has built some sort of an attachment to either you or to their parents or, you know, their house parents or whatever, is you're going to see some evidence of these. Okay? And they say, research says that within 3 months of coming into a different environment of care, that the child will take on the attachment style of their caregiver. So you guys have a very important role, and meeting those needs can help that. You're actually, I always tell people, do you realize that you guys are neurosurgeons? Because when we teach all of these things to our kids, we are literally building new neuro pathways. That's so fascinating. I mean, just like if you learn a new skill, it doesn't matter how old you are. If you go to a new job or get a new phone, oh my Lord, have mercy. Okay? These phones are like, it takes forever to learn how to use them. But when we're learning a new skill, we are building new pathways. So in the same way, we are building new pathways for our kids when we're teaching them how to relate and to know that, we got somebody, you know, people will meet their needs. Okay, so this is the attachment cycle that I mentioned earlier. So when I was talking about the baby cries and we go and we meet their needs, this is kind of a way, let me see if I can get the little, aha. Okay, so you've got needs expressed here and you've got needs met here. So on a very surface level, you've got either a baby or an older child. They are in distress. So a baby cries because they're hungry, or an older child maybe cries or doesn't cry when they fall over like on a bicycle or something and stubs their, you know, scrapes their knee. And then you've got the comfort. So a safe parent, a nurturing parent will come to them and hold, like with a baby, they will meet their need, or they will go to the child and say, oh, are you okay? Do you need a band-aid? Do you need a hug? That sort of thing. So there's lots of things that are going on in our bodies when this happens. You've got the sympathetic nervous system that kicks in when you're in distress. So you've got your nervous system that's saying, something is wrong. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I just fell off my bike. Something is wrong. Okay? And it's sending messages through the extremities. And so that's your fight, flight, or freeze. This is called the HPA axis. And this is your stress cycle and how your body responds to stress. And so if you have, and every time I hit the light thing, that noise goes off, sorry. If you have that happen, you're in distress, then when a parent or a caregiver comes along and meets the need, then your parasympathetic nervous system kicks in. And that's basically saying, oh, you know what? I scraped my knee, but and it hurts, but I'm going to be okay. It'll be all right. And so within a little while, the child or the person is able to calm down. Also, you've got your excitatory and inhibitory neurotransmitters. So when you're in crisis or in distress, then your body sends chemicals throughout. Okay, so you've got cortisol, that your stress hormone, that says something is wrong. I've got to figure out how to survive. And so you also have things in your body that you can evidence of a child being stressed out. Because, like we said, if they don't have felt safety, they may just be sitting here like you guys. We're all sitting here. But there may be something in the environment that triggers them. Something I say, something they hear, or something they see. And all of a sudden, they go there. And so you can notice maybe sometimes they clench their fists. You can notice their jaw, if you ever see the jaw clench. If you're close enough, their pupils will dilate. Your heart will palpitate. So your body goes into this stress, it will response system, a stress response system. And what it needs is a safe and loving and nurturing adult to meet that need so that the body is able to regulate. So when we were talking about the activities where we have them dysregulate and regulate, that's a way to practice those things without falling off of a bike or without really getting your feelings hurt because somebody said something mean to you. Just having their body practice that, then you can say, you know what, the other day when we were playing that hula hoop thing and you got really out of control, but then I helped you with your engine plate and we did that activity, well, we can do that with this too because you're upset. And I think you would like to maybe take a walk, or do you want a weighted blanket? Providing those things, meeting those needs. So what Dr. Purvis would say is, if those needs are not met, so if the cycle does not get completed over and over and over again, because when we have babies, we will say yes to them thousands and thousands and thousands of time. And every time we say yes to them, we're building trust. And I'm not saying yes to anything they want. I'm talking about meeting their needs, their emotional and physical needs. We're building trust because then they will go, okay, mom is going to come and feed me when I'm hungry. They're going to take care of me. So then when you have to say no, we're not going to have candy right now. We're about to have dinner. Then they should be able to handle that. They should be able to regulate, okay? But kids that have never had that, they were told no over and over again. Their mom was using drugs, and so they never got picked up in the crib, or they weren't fed, or they weren't changed. Or mom and dad were fighting all the time, or maybe even they had somebody that physically and sexually abused them. They were told no over and over and over. And their body was in constant chronic stress. So they didn't have the good inhibitory neurotransmitters like serotonin, dopamine, and GABA that would calm their systems. They had cortisol all the time and epinephrine, all those things that keep their bodies in constant arousal all the time. So when that happens, Dr. Purvis believes that that's where you start kind of seeing mental health issues. So at age two or three, if you have no all the time and the needs are not met, then you're going to start seeing dysregulation. I know that's hard because every 2 and 3 year old is dysregulated, right? But we're talking something different. We're talking a kiddo that's pulling down the curtains, that's breaking things. It just feels different. You know, you're like, there's something not right. And then if it continues, if you don't start meeting that need, then by, I think 6 to 8, you start seeing depression and anxiety. The teachers at school will say, I think they're ADHD. I think you need to go get them some medicine for ADHD. Okay. Don't hear me. I'm not completely against, don't hear me. Hear me out is what I mean. I'm not completely against, medication. However, a lot of our kids are not really ADHD. They are just super anxious. And if you can calm them and give them that felt safety, you may be able to solve some of the issues. But don't get me wrong, I know that kids have been through some hard things and sometimes they do need that medication to kind of get them going. But I think we go really, really quickly to the ADHD label. Then by the time they're teenagers, you're seeing bipolar disorder and aggression and things like that. But if you think about it, that's all because people were not meeting the need. They were not building trusting relationships, so they had to compensate and figure out how to survive. Okay, so what are some of the things that we can do to help build connection and build relationship? So there's several things here that we talk about. Behavioral matching, okay? What might be an example of matching a child behaviorally? Is there something you can think of?
Sitting down with them, color, when they color with red, you color with green.
Yeah. So doing the same activity they're doing. So if they're outside playing basketball, you might pick up a ball and shoot some hoops with them. If they're sitting down coloring, you might sit down and color with them too. If they're just sitting, you might just go sit down with them. You might not even have to say anything. Just being with, okay? Attachment is about being emotionally available and present. And when I talked earlier in the beginning of this presentation, this session, when I said we need to be mindful of our stuff. If you're not mindful of your own history, you're not able to be emotionally present. And it's not because you're a bad person, okay? It's because we are still dealing with our stuff, and we naturally need to meet our own needs. And so a lot of times a kid will come to us. I say us because I'm one of us, okay? I struggle with this too. Somebody will come to us with a need, and it's frustrating. Or, I don't have time for it. Or, you should be old enough to do this. When really, what they're asking is for connection. And for whatever reason, I'm just not available. I don't know, maybe I'm stressed out. Maybe I just don't know how to relate that closely to a kiddo. But we have to really look at ourselves. So, behavioral matching, doing the same things that they're doing. Nurturing touch, we talked about touch earlier this morning. Just being careful to not be threatening and asking permission and that sort of thing. It's really important to do touch. You can do, there's a cool little activity called the weather report. It's kind of like a massage, but it's kind of fun. And you can, the adult can be, you know, behind a child that's sitting down. And so you're acting like, oh, it's raining. And so you kind of have your hands like on their back, and then, oh, the wind's blowing, and it's snowing, and oh, it's lightning, and thunder, and so it's kind of like a massage, but it's kind of playful, and it might be more non-threatening to children that may not like touch. They have the Wilbarger brush protocol, but I don't think it's called the Wilbarger brush protocol anymore. I think it's just called the brushing protocol, but it's a little plastic brush for kids that have the sensory issues of touch. There's all kinds of things that you can do. Okay, eyes. I learned that my eyes can be real scary sometimes. And so being really mindful of how you look at somebody, it's real, you know, when we, as adults, if we've got a kiddo that's not following instruction or not doing what we're asking them to, we immediately go, you know, we're thinking, this ain't happening. But just be careful of that, because they eye contact can be very threatening to children. And if you're able to give warm eyes and help them to know that you are not there to hurt them, harm them, put them down, that sort of thing, it can kind of go a long way. And then voice quality. So we have to be careful not to be too permissive. So let me tell you, TBRI, some people think that TBRI is letting the kids do anything they want. And anytime somebody says that to me, I say, that's not TBRI. Because TBRI is a balance of structure and nurture. So, there is a video that I do have here that I can show you, where Dr. Purvis, she's not messing around. Okay, when she's got a kiddo that's not doing what she needs her to do, she's right there with them. She is telling them it's not okay to do whatever it is that they're doing. However, she also has a balance of nurture. She has built that trusting relationship with that child, that child knows, you know what, she cares about me. And so she's able to work through the situation with that child. In fact, let me just show up real quick. I think that would be helpful to give that example. So you see how she was right there with her, and she was letting her know it's not okay, but I'm going to give you a chance to redo this. Do you want to drop?
okay, I'm getting colors, and then I'll come get you from the movie and watch the movie.
She's going to behaviorally match with her. I'm going to color with you.
Okay. You don't have to draw with you. Oh, you okay? You don't have to draw with her. You don't have to draw with her. She's going to draw with you because I like to draw. I thought you did. You don't have to. So, what I understand is...
Okay, yeah, so let's see what she does with that. Okay, so in context of connection, let me bring up my slides here. We were talking about behavioral matching. We were, where's my, here we go. Behavioral matching, nurturing touch, warm eyes, voice quality, playful engagement. What did you see in those clips? Yeah, she's a master. She's a master. I mean, most of us go, no, don't turn off that light. I'm talking to you. We're trying to get this thing done, right? But she was, talk to me about some things that stuck out to you that you saw that were connecting.
The eye contact. She kept making sure she was looking at her.
Yes. And it wasn't, you look at me, right? She was being very nurturing. What, she did the chin prompt. And I don't, did she actually touch her chin or was it more figurative? She does that a lot because sometimes touch really is threatening to kids. So you can do kind of a feather, like almost like a figurative, and it's almost like you are touching them. But it's basically you sending the message, I want to give you some nurturing touch. Okay, she did the eye contact. What else?
She never raised her voice.
Yeah. Even when she was down here, she was almost kind of doing the neck roll, right?
I was surprised that she could have.
Yeah, it did. And it, you know why it worked? It worked because she had a relationship with that child. So with another child, that may not have worked. And she has said that before when she's presented on this. So her voice was in control. And so you notice a difference. So when she was with her on the floor, her cadence was a little bit stronger and more authoritarian. And basically saying, you know what, I'm the boss, so it's not okay for you to do this. But then when they were up together kind of by the light, she was very soft and talking about, I want to color with you. Do you want to color? What do you want to do? So all of that, and she was able to get that child to finally, because the first time was like, she did it, which is pretty, it's a big deal. When you get a kid to do what you ask them to do and let go of their control, huge, okay? And so she actually kind of lowered her bar of expectation. But then she said, you know what, let's try it again. You can do better. Let's try that again. And so she had her do it, and it was great. And she was able to give her a high five and say, this is excellent. So that child was able to be successful in that instance. Okay? All right, I'm going to have you guys do an activity. So at your table, each of you pick a square of which one you would like to talk about. And for the next 5 minutes or so, discuss with each person at your table your square. So everybody gets a chance to talk about whichever one you choose, okay? And think about the skills that we just talked about. Okay, real quickly, let's take just a break, just really quickly. So I think you guys have been very intentional, intent. So let's, even though you may not have finished, I want you to switch and not be attentive, not use the connecting strategies. So do not use eye contact. Do not use your voice. Do not, all of those things. So finish your conversations in the next minute or so doing that, because we're going to talk about how that experience is. Hard, isn't it? Get your cell phone out if you need to. All right, let's do about 30 seconds and then just finish up and we'll move on. Okay. It's always so fun to be up here watching you guys because this part is so uncomfortable for people, and I see a lot of giggling because it's like, I don't know how to do this. I don't want to be disrespectful. Okay, so talk to me about, first, talk to me about the experience in the beginning. How did you feel talking to the person that was really trying to attend to you and pay attention and connect with you? What was that like?
I felt my responses to Don's question was important.
Yeah.
The eye contact made me feel very comfortable to be able to express where I would love to go on a dream vacation.
Yeah. So, yeah, even if you said something that maybe he didn't like at all, I would never want to go to a vacation or that, it made you feel like, I am valuable.
Yes.
And did it make you feel like that you could talk to him more, like it was encouragement for, hey, I could have a conversation with this guy more. Okay, good deal. Any other experiences? Like anybody sitting at a table that you already know really well, did you learn something about that person you didn't know? Yeah. Yeah, and so do you feel like, I mean, you might not be like the bestest of friends, but like, do you feel a little bit closer to that person because you know that information? Yeah. Okay, anything else about the first part that stuck out to people? Okay, what about the second part? What was it like to talk to a person that didn't really care what you were saying to them? How'd that make you? Yeah. It made you laugh because it was weird, huh? I heard somebody go, are you listening to me? Got a little dysregulated there. Yeah. So, think about that when you're dealing with your clients, whether it's kids or adults. How important, see how you felt when you had somebody that was really paying attention and giving the message to you that you mean something. I'm stopping what I'm doing right now and I'm going to pay attention to what you're saying, even if maybe it's not a big, I don't care about Fortnite, but maybe it's important to talk to your kids about Fortnite for a second. I don't know, just to connect, just to build a connection for a second. My daughter and I, when we went on family vacation several years ago, we were in Florida and somebody was there doing the henna tattoos that, stay for like 2 weeks or something. And, she wanted one and I got one with her. And I just wanted that to be a connection thing. Like, I accept what you're doing. I think that's kind of cool. So I'm going to get one too. And one of the things that we connect with, on is both of us love Broadway musicals. And so we got an opportunity to see Hamilton last week. And we've been to other musicals together and we love listening to that music together. And that's just something that she knows she has with me. My husband is really not very musical. And so, I mean, he likes to listen to country music, but that's not her thing. And so she knows that with me, she can pretty much listen to any music because I love music. I don't care what it is. I love it. So I'll listen to it. Now with her dad, she has other things that they connect with. So just know that this small thing can go a really long way just to take some time and to be, to use those connecting strategies. Okay. Here's some just ideas, that you might take away. I used this. I did a training at, an agency called Boys and Girls Country in the Houston area. And, I thought it might be helpful to give the staff, the house parent staff, some ideas on things that they could do just to connect. I mean, things like game night or making food together. My kids love, they love kind of food rituals, and food is kind of a thing in our household. We like it. But we like making food. We like going to cool restaurants and things like that. So, it's a nice connecting, strategy for us. Different crafts. And a lot of your crafts are also sensory. And so playing with Play-Doh, that's amazing for proprioceptive integration. Dancing, that's great for your vestibular. Okay. And also your proprioceptive. So some of these activities can help on several different levels. Going outside, a scavenger hunt is always really fun. That's something that my husband's really good with, and he does it. He will often take a lot of the boys on campus fishing or camping just to get them away, get away, have some time off campus. And he often will do a scavenger hunt and have them go, okay, go find something that you can make a shelter with, and then they make something and it's fun. And, so all of those things, ways to connect, ways to be together and enjoy each other are important. Okay, let me, we only have about 5 or so minutes, or are we, I think my watch is kind of slow. What time is it? Oh, 3 minutes. Okay. So this is the piece that I'm just literally going to like, I mean, this attachment styles, I mean, I could do a whole day on this. So I just want to kind of tell you about them, and then maybe one day we can talk about it more. But just so that you know what they are, we talked about secure attachment earlier and the skills of attachment and the evidence that your child, you know, the give care, receive care, autonomy, and negotiate needs. So attachment styles are a pattern of relationship, okay? And it's usually passed down by generations because we know how to relate to other people based upon how we related to by our family and our parents, okay? And so it's not, even though the secure attachment is the optimal, it's not horrible that you have these two, the avoidant and ambivalent, which are insecure. Now, the disorganized is one that can be detrimental. But the secure is when you've had an adult that has met your needs on a regular basis and you feel that trusting relationship. A child is typically able to regulate themselves or go to someone to help them regulate. Because even as adults, sometimes I have to have my husband help me regulate because there are things sometimes that really upset me. But I know that I have somebody that I can go to help me. The avoidant attachment style is where a child has learned that their attachment figure, whether it's their biological parent or caregiver, is uncomfortable with being emotionally present for them, okay? It does not mean that that person is a horrible person. That person may be amazing at giving them medicine when they're sick or being at every single PTA meeting or every single ball game. But when it comes time when that child is upset and is in distress and needs somebody to be emotionally available to them, it's just not comfortable for that adult. And so that child over time learns that they have to kind of, even though they still have the need, it's almost kind of, they kind of suck it up. And so in, I wish I had time to show you these clips, but in some of the clips where they have, it's called strength situation, where they score behaviors of children and try to figure out their attachment style. The avoidant babies are the good babies. They're the ones that it's a setup. What they do is they have a mom bring their child into a room and it's a strange situation. It's a room that they've never been into. They've never been around the people. And so they bring a child that's like 12 months to 18 months old and they bring them in the room and the mom sits there for a few minutes. And then a stranger comes in the room and sits with them for just a few minutes. Then the mom leaves the room and they score the behavior of the child. So the secure babies are distraught because their attachment figure, the person that they know is going to take care of them, is gone and they don't know where they are. And so when the mom comes back in, they also score the behavior of the baby of the reunion with the parent. And so a secure baby makes a beeline to that mama. Okay, because they know exactly who's going to take care of their needs. So the avoidant baby, when the mom leaves, the baby's just playing with their toys. They might look, but I'm cool. I'm fine. No crying. And then when mom comes back in, hey, mom. I mean, they won't say hey, mom, because they're 18 months old, but hey, okay. And when the stranger's in there, they're just like, whatever. You would think that that child is, oh, he's acclimated. He's great. When they took the urine out of those diapers of those babies and measured the cortisol levels, they were just as high as the secure baby. The secure baby that you saw the behavior. Oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do. The cry was like, it was the same. Their stress level was exactly the same. The avoidant baby learned to mask the emotion. Okay? That's when you don't, you know, and it's not, it sounds like we're saying that parent is horrible. It's not. It's just the pattern of behavior that they've learned. And the child just learns how, just says, okay, they can't handle that. Not cognitively, they're not, but they have learned behaviorally that I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to be okay. Okay. But on the inside, they really are still stressed out. Quickly, I know we got to go. The ambivalent is a child that it's kind of like a push-pull. So when the mom comes in the room, Actually, when the mom leaves, the baby is very distraught, like the secure, but the stranger is not able to soothe them at all. And then when mom comes back in, she soothes just for a minute and then ramps up. And soothes just for a minute and then ramps up again. So the message is, mom, you're not real consistent with being emotionally there for me, so I'm going to keep your attention as much as I can. And so what's interesting about these attachment styles is unless you work on becoming earned secure, as adults, they will carry throughout. And so an avoidant adult is somebody that may really get wrapped up in their work. Like, you know, they love their family. I mean, they love them like nobody's business. But I feel really more comfortable in working so I can provide for my family, not really being emotionally present for them. And then the ambivalent turns into a, it's a different word. It's, entangled. Yeah. The ambivalent, infant turns into an entangled adult. And so that's a person that can't let go of their history. Like they keep bringing it up over and over and over again. And it's somebody that sometimes they tell you things that you really don't feel like you have business knowing. And that's kind of on the extreme, but if it's somebody that just keeps on living that over and over again and is not able to let go, that is evidence of an entangled, attachment style. Okay. Now the disorganized is where the adult or the attachment figure is actually scary and fearful to the child. And so they've got this dichotomy. I'm designed to go to my attachment figure to get my needs met. However, my attachment figure is terrifying to me. So now my way of relating to people and processing relationships is disorganized. There's no organization about it at all. So in the clips of the strange situation, you will see sometimes a kid that will start going toward the mom when they come in the room, but they stop. Or they start just screaming. I mean, it's very interesting. Or you have the stereotypies, the weird body stuff that they do because they are literally confused. They don't know what to do because they know they need to go to somebody, but the person that is they're supposed to go to is kind of scary to them. Okay. Let me see what else. Do I have something else? Yeah, this is on your sheet. So some of the outcomes of secure attachment is a child being able to socialize with adults and with their peers and interact. Also, persistence. A lot of our kids quit, right? Because it's too hard. It hurts them to think that I can't be successful, so why try? So a kiddo that is securely attached and knows it's okay to fail sometimes will persist and keep on going even though that they don't get it every single time. Okay? I'll show this when we come back. This is another animate that is about attachment. We'll start off with that and then we'll go into correcting. Lunchtime.